Live from West Babylon, New York, this is Sports Talk 1240.
And a very good Sunday night, ladies and gentlemen, June 19th, 2016, from the studios here at WGBB in Freeport, Long Island, and around the world at SportsTalk1240.com, TuneIn.com, and in your pockets on the TuneIn mobile apps. My name is Andrew Claudio, and we are taking you all the way till 10 o'clock here in hour number two of Sports Talk 1240. Happy Father's Day to all the dads out there, especially my dad. You know, I was going through the list of things my dad taught me today, and he taught me to be a Mets fan, so I'm not really happy on your Father's Day today, sir, but we'll get to them in a second. Stay connected with us. Follow the show on Twitter at SportsTalk1240. Follow me on Twitter at Andrew Claudio. That's Andrew, like it's spelled in the Bible. And Claudio, that's C-L-Audio. Interact with us on Facebook at SportsTalk1240. You can find even the show on Instagram. I don't know what we Instagram, but we're on Instagram. SportsTalk1240. So for those of you who like to watch the show live on the camera into the studio and are not seeing somebody in the studio, that's because this is a pre-recorded segment. I know a lot of you are probably hearing this the next day because Game 7 of the NBA Finals is happening as we speak, at least as you're hearing this, at least as it's being played live is what I'll say. Hopefully, when this is being played, LeBron and the Cavs are up by 15 on what is the most amazingly heel-turned team in sports that I can remember in the Golden State Warriors. I loved watching that team during the regular season. I had the NBA TV package, and I loved watching Steph Curry make history. And all of a sudden, it's like professional wrestling. They're all of a sudden a heel turn. And I can't wait to see them lose, or I hope they lose. But anyway, hopefully we're getting a good game tonight. But this is New York. And, you know, last time I was on, I said, let's not panic about the New York Mets. Because everybody was dropping like flies. They were still pitching really well. Bartolo Colon was hitting home runs. This is still going to be a special year. Now they're in third place. David Wright's career is probably over. Michael Conforto's hitting .225. And now it might be time to panic a little bit because they just got swept into third place by the worst team in baseball. The Atlanta Braves have the sixth most wins this season at Turner Field. They are one of the worst home teams of all time. This weekend when I watched Mets games, I didn't even know who was on the Braves roster other than Freddie Freeman and Nick Markakis. I didn't even realize Julio Teheran was still in baseball. Last I checked, he was throwing temper tantrums at AAA, and they were debating trading him in that Shelby Miller trade. Somebody legitimately asked me this weekend when we checked the Braves score, the Braves-Mets score on Saturday night, can you name four Atlanta Braves? And I couldn't. And the Mets got swept by that team at home. Are you kidding me? Look, I get it. Injuries happen, but this team is way too deep and was supposed to be way too good to have moments like this happen. And look, I get it, hindsight's 2020, and I'm playing the result here, but I said this during the offseason, so I'm able to now play the result because I was right. This is why you signed Daniel Murphy. I get it. Neil Walker had 10 home runs in April. We were all excited. We were all, hey, good luck in Washington, Murph. Thanks for everything. But we got Neil Walker. He hits home runs. Well, guess what? Neil Walker hits solo home runs. He's got 14 home runs and 28 RBIs. The guy's hitting under .240 with runners in scoring position. Curtis Granderson is having an amazing power season because he's got 13 home runs. And he's got 21 RBIs. Now, I get it. He's a leadoff hitter, so that's going to happen. And he hits a ton of leadoff home runs. But at the same time, he's batting .111 with runners in scoring position. That's impressive how bad that is. And what's Daniel Murphy doing? Oh, just he's the National League MVP to this point. He's batting .360, 11 home runs. That .360 is after like a 10-for-45 stretch that he just had. It was something stupid where his average dropped 40 points, and yet he's still leading the National League in batting. This is why you sign an infielder that can play multiple positions. This is why you sign a pure hitter, because then when you look back at the postseason, do the Mets even get past the Dodgers without Daniel Murphy? Do the Mets even get past Clayton Kershaw and Zach Greinke and John Lester and Jake Arrieta without Daniel Murphy? Because right now, they can't even get past Julio Teheran. The Mets are in trouble. It's plain and simple. The Mets are in trouble. And I'm not going to say that the season's over, because if the season ended today, the Mets would be playing, I think, the Marlins in a one-game playoff, or they're like a half game out for that one-game playoff. So I'm not saying the season's over. So I guess this isn't technically rock bottom. But at the same time, there is cause for concern that that's their ceiling, is that one-game playoff. The Nationals look good. They have very good starting pitching this year. It starts with Scherzer. It goes to Strasburg. Joe Ross is pitching well. Their weak link is Papelbon, which I get it can be a weak link come postseason time, but he can get you 40 saves on a year where they look like they're headed to 100 wins. The New York Mets are 7 games out of first place on June 19th. That's almost impressive. The Mets are in third place. This was supposed to be a year where the Mets competed going back and forth with the Nationals. And at this point, they might only go back and forth with the Marlins. This offense is in trouble. Curtis Granderson, I love the guy. I'm not going to say he's shot or that we should trade him. But Curtis Granderson has been terrible this year. Michael Conforto is having the worst sophomore slump ever. Neil Walker, Asdrubal Cabrera, they're doing what you ask of them. They're not supposed to be your 2 and your 4 hitter. They're supposed to be your 6 and 7 hitters this year. I'm telling you, it's tough to watch right now. I would scream and yell, go get a bat, but teams don't like to make trades right now. What you need is basically to hang on tight and try to be within striking distance come the All-Star break. Because at least come the trade deadline, so that way you're even in a position to make a trade. That's what happened last year. The Mets were close, and then they made all those trades, and then they were right there, luckily playing the Nationals at the All-Star break. And look, I actually like that Wilmer Flores is going to play every day now, because I think he deserves a shot. The guy, I think the stat today, before today's game, he was batting .356 before he took since he took over for David Wright at third base. I'm okay with Flores. I'm actually at the point, to be completely honest, where you put Lagares in center field every day and put Cespedes in left. Send Conforto down. I mean, not for nothing, the Pacific Coast League MVP or player of the month in Rivera in AAA in Vegas is batting .360. Give him a shot. Platoon him at first base with James Loney. I'm okay with that. And Travis d'Arnaud is apparently coming back, because he was only hitting .150 before he got injured. Tough times for New York Mets fans. And to be completely honest, it's only going to get worse. Because we're about to hear about the Kansas City Royals returning to where they won their World Series in the same clubhouse, we're in the same field, where they popped champagne, and where they won their first championship in 30 years. You're about to hear that for the next 3 days, New York Mets fans. Unfortunately, and then you go to Atlanta against a team that you just got swept by. And then you play the Washington Nationals, who you're 6.5 games behind. And then it gets easier because you play the best team in baseball in the Cubs for 3 games. Excuse me, for 4 games at Citi Field. Then Miami comes into town, the team ahead of you in the standings. And then the Washington Nationals returned to Citi Field for 4. And then you get a break in the All-Star break. So if you look at it, the Mets have 20 games before the All-Star break. Can you ask them to go 11-9 at worst? Are we looking at 10-10? Will they go worse than that? I mean, they do play 2 of the best teams in baseball. The 2 best teams in the National League in that stretch 7 times each. Excuse me, they only play the Cubs 4 times. I apologize. They do play the Cubs 3 more times after the All-Star break, though. But I digress. Can we ask the Mets to go something crazy like 14-6? Can we ask them to get hot and beat teams like this? Can we ask Michael Conforto in his first full season to not hit like he's a sophomore in baseball? Because I honestly, I don't know what the answer is right now, other than the fact that maybe we were wrong. The Mets aren't that good. Maybe they had lightning in a bottle last year when they got Cespedes and that lineup was really stacked. You know, they're second in the National League in home runs, but they're 28th in baseball in runs per game. Their team average is third to last. They're just not that great offensively. They have no table setters. Like, it was great when Curtis Granderson last year was getting on base. This year, he's hitting 111 with runners in scoring position and has an on-base percentage under 300. I mean, he's got a ton of home runs. Maybe the solution is to put Lagares in center and put Cespedes in left and give Conforto some time in the minors. I'm just spitballing here. Give the rookie a chance to clear his head. You know, it's done wonders for people in the past. Look at Travis d'Arnaud. Spent a week in AAA where the ball flies at Las Vegas. Hit, I think, a home run a day. Came back, had a ton of confidence. He's been a major league catcher ever since. Maybe you send Conforto down for a bit. Give your gold glove center fielder a chance to play every day and bat leadoff. Maybe that's the thing that changes. You bat Granderson behind Cespedes, so you have him in more of a power spot. All I know is it's time to panic, because hopefully this is rock bottom. The last thing you want is during this stretch of games before the All-Star break, the Mets to go something crazy like 8-12, and then this is a 500 team when the Mets are taking a break for the All-Star game. And the ironic thing is, the Mets have like four All-Stars on this team right now. Cespedes is probably going to start. Syndergaard's there. Mats you can make a case for. And Familia leads the majors in saves. That team of four All-Stars might be a 500 team at the All-Star break. It's time to panic. And I'm not even saying that as a Mets fan. I'm just saying it as somebody who watches a lot of baseball. The Nationals are really good. I underestimated them. I thought Daniel Murphy was going to be better than he was last year. I thought he would help them. I didn't realize he was going to be, like I said, the National League MVP to this point. One last thing before we move on to the other New York team, who's actually probably more fun to watch at this point because they actually score runs. Please do not hop on the Terry Collins, please fire Terry Collins bandwagons. One last thing before we move on to the other New York team that's actually probably more fun to watch at this point because they score runs. Please, I beg of you, New York Met fans, do not hop on the fire Terry Collins bandwagon. Realize he's one of the best managers the Mets have had. He is a player's manager. He is not a robot that manages from a binder. You know, he doesn't follow the sabermetric way where you play to the formula and not to the how do I feel about this guy today? You know? One of the reasons the Mets made it to the World Series was because Terry Collins decided, not because he had a seventh inning guy or because he needed an eighth inning guy, he managed from his heart and decided, hey, I'm going Syndergaard in game 5 against the Dodgers in the seventh inning, and then I'm going Familia for 6. That's a move that wins you playoff series. That's a move that, honestly, Don Mattingly wouldn't have made, and it's why he's managing in Miami right now. Well, right now, he's probably better off. Look, I'm not going to blame Terry Collins for something that's out of his control. I don't think he's a make-or-break manager. He's not bad, though. He's not the worst manager. This isn't Art Howe. You know, this isn't a bad manager that's holding this team back. I think he's done fine. I don't think the better option is even out there. This team just needs to hit. This team needs to get healthy, and this team needs to hit. I still believe this is a playoff team. I still believe this is a team that will compete for a World Series this year. It might just take a one-game playoff to do it. Still plenty of baseball left, don't get me wrong. It is Father's Day. Happy Father's Day again, everybody. But there is a good possibility that we're looking up at the standings in the All-Star break, and the Mets are 11-12 games out of first place, and that trade that you want them to make at the All-Star break, at the trade deadline, is so that way they aren't going to miss out on a one-game playoff at Citi Field, or worse, on the road. Sports Talk 1240. Ladies and gentlemen, please connect with us on Twitter at Sports Talk 1240 or at facebook.com/ I almost said backsplash. We start calling it that. / Sports Talk 1240. And as I said, on Instagram. Who knows? We might start taking pictures of this camera that's up in the studio. On to the other New York team. Now, the last time that I was on, I told you don't be surprised if the Yankees are over 500. And as a Mets fan, I was actually sitting on my couch this afternoon rooting for the Yankees because they would have been over 500 and winners of four straight with Colorado and Minnesota coming into Yankee Stadium for five. And we could be looking at them making a run at that second wild card. More importantly, I would have been right. But unfortunately, that did not happen. All this to say, the Yankees are one game under 500. They are four games out of that second wild card. Now, as far as the division's concerned, they are 6.5 out, so that actually still is a possibility. I think Baltimore, they're offensively, Baltimore is so impressive. And in that ballpark, you can win a division without, you know, an ace, quote unquote. You know, I think Tillman is 10-1. He won his 10th game today, according to my fantasy team. So I guess you can call him an ace, but he's not in the Jake Arrietas of the world. He's not a David Price or a Chris Archer. The Orioles will probably win that division because it's going to be between them and the Red Sox. Let them fight it out. That second wild card spot, I still think the Yankees are right there. I mentioned before that Daniel Murphy is the National League MVP. I'm going to go ahead and say that the American League MVP, if things keep going the way they are, Carlos Beltran's going to make a name for himself. Because here's the deal with the Yankees. I have no clue if they're going to be buyers at the trade deadline and they're going to go look for a Chris Archer or, like we saw today, a Julio Teheran from the Braves. If they're going to go look for pitching, I think they have a lot of mediocre starters right now that you really can't just bench. You know, you can't just designate them. You might, I don't know, they might designate them for assignment, but we'll see. I don't know if they're going to be sellers at the trade deadline, and they look at Carlos Beltran as a piece they can move to try and get prospects back. You know, I'll say this, though. I am so impressed with the season Carlos Beltran's had. He's hitting close to .285. He's got 18 home runs. He's leading this team in RBIs. He's clearly their best hitter right now. And he's getting big hit after big hit for this team. I'll be honest, he was always one of my favorite Mets when he was on this side of the New York baseball border. Despite this overrated called third strike that he took, which was thrown by a pitcher that was going to become one of the best pitchers in baseball the next five or six seasons. Honestly, Adam Wainwright was a 20-game winner, and he was in a closer role at that point. I'm not that upset. Once and for all, please, Met fans, realize he's probably a Hall of Famer, and if he goes in, he's probably going to wear a Mets cap. So you're going to look up, which is always ironic when people talk about retiring numbers. I always think it's for your Hall of Famers. So if that means Carlos Beltran gets his number retired by the Mets, when you look up and tell your kids about the stories of those numbers, oh, who's number 31? Oh, that was Mike Piazza. He's probably the greatest hitting catcher ever. He hit a big home run right after 9/11. He was awesome. Well, who's number 41? Oh, that's Tom Seaver. He was Tom Terrific. He was the franchise. He led this team to credibility in their first championship in 1969. The Miracle Mets. He was awesome. Who's number 15? That was Carlos Beltran. We treated him like crap, and then he had a really good year, his second year, but he took a called third strike to end the season, and then he was the best player, hit .360 in September the next two seasons, but nobody else hit, and they blew two division leads at the end of the year to close out Shea Stadium, and then he got hurt for the rest of his Mets career. Unfortunately, that is Carlos Beltran's Mets legacy. But his Yankee legacy. I love it how when I go to talk Yankees, I still end up talking about the Mets. I digress. The Yankees, on the other hand. Look, they're 34 and 35. I actually think they've overachieved to this point. You have a week where you have the Rockies coming in. I get it. You just lost to the Rockies. But the Rockies are not a great team, especially on the road. So take care of business against them. Then the worst team in baseball comes into town. And the Twins, who are now the worst team in baseball because the Mets just got swept by the other worst team in baseball. So there's no reason that the Yankees can't win 5 in a row, 4 and 1. And then you're looking at this team over 500. You know, we just went over the Mets schedule up to the All-Star break. The Yankees, on the other hand, have the Rangers afterwards, who, did anybody else see them being the best team in the American League? Because I didn't. I didn't realize that this is how things were going to go. Colby Lewis taking a perfect game into the eighth inning this week. He's 6-0. Yu Darvish is back. Well, I think he's injured again. But I digress. I still think that the Yankees are well on their way to being not sellers, but contenders for that second wild card spot. I don't see why this team isn't the exact same as last year, where they don't make a big move at the All-Star break, at the trade deadline. They don't trade any of their big pieces. They don't trade any of your guys for prospects. Because here's the deal with the Yankees, and I've said this on this show before. The plan with the Yankees right now isn't a big move. It's just this waiting game for these contracts to expire. They're waiting for Teixeira's contract to be off the books. They're waiting for Beltran and for CeCe and for McCann and the obvious one, the DH, Alex Rodriguez, who is still on this team next season, and then he'll go into the broadcast booth and probably be there for the next 20 years. The Yankees are playing the waiting game. They're probably about an 85 to 88 win team. Just ask Ken Davidoff. He will tell you they're an 88 win team. I don't think that's bad. I think that's kind of their ceiling right now. And I know, listen, Yankee fans, I get it. You had an expectation for about 20 years of championship or bust. But that era is over. You don't have the greatest closer of all time in your bullpen. You got a pretty damn good one, I'll say that. Chapman's not bad. You have basically three closers in your bullpen right now. But there is, Yankee fans, something I've come to notice with them is they have this expectation, because they, especially Yankee fans my age, that grew up in, it's the playoffs every year. It's the World Series every year. Derek Jeter, Bernie Williams, Mariano Rivera, Jorge Posada, Paul O'Neill, Tino Martinez, all of these all-time Yankees that somehow ended up in Monument Park. You know, they have this expectation that this team will eventually turn it around just because, well, pinstripes and pride and history and tradition and blah, blah, blah. And I'm not even trying to mock it. I wish the Mets grew up with that. I would have had a much better childhood. But all that to say, look, it is not wrong to be a team that's hovering around a wild card spot. That's actually a fun season. A lot of teams don't get to have 25 years where your worst record is 84 and 78. A lot of teams don't get a run like the Yankees have had. A lot of teams don't get to look at a team that will win 85 games and say, oh, that's disappointing. Look, I thought this team was going to win the division. For all we know, they could turn it around the second half if their pitching turns it around. Because one thing I thought was going to be the problem was that their aged superstars weren't going to hit. And guess what? They have. It's their pitching that's the problem. So we'll see. The Yankees have a stretch coming up where they can get over 500 and really separate themselves from the 500 mark. And hopefully that leads to a fun summer for the pinstripe faithful. I'll tell you this much. You're probably getting a good laugh at Met fans right now who really beat their chest after that run to the World Series and all the young pitchers that they have and how they're saying that this is their town now. Well, guess what? There is a chance the Mets and Yankees could have the same record, or worst case scenario, the Yankees have a better one at the All-Star break. Sports Talk 1240, ladies and gentlemen. When we come back, we're going to review a certain show that I want you guys to pay attention to. It's sports related, don't get me wrong, and there's an anniversary that's involved with it. But we're going to take a quick break and be back with more Sports Talk 1240 right after this.
Sports Talk 1240 on Long Island's AM 1240. WGBB.
Country Foot Care, official podiatrists of the New York Lizards, have been delivering state-of-the-art foot care with good old-fashioned caring to Long Island residents for over 30 years. Specialists in sports medicine and foot injuries, Country Foot Care can be reached at 516-741-FEET or online at countryfootcare.com.
Want to advertise your business on Sports Talk 1240? Place an ad on sportstalk1240.com and run a radio commercial during the show every Sunday night here on AM 1240 WGBB. Our rates are very affordable. We'll even produce the radio commercial for you. Just head over to sportstalk1240.com and fill out the Contact Us form and let us start promoting your business today.
Unflippable, unflappable, unleakable. The Gust Buster is the only umbrella that won't flip inside out, rip, tear, or leak. Capable of withstanding winds over 55 miles per hour. All of our umbrellas are constructed of the finest quality materials and backed by a limited lifetime guarantee. What are you waiting for? Visit GustBuster.com and get your Gust Buster today.
Stay connected to Sports Talk 1240 by following us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Sports Talk 1240.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240, broadcasting every Sunday night beginning at 8 p.m. right here on Long Island's AM 1240 WGBB, the station that serves your community. And now, back to the show.
Welcome back to Sports Talk 1240, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Andrew Claudio. Stay connected with us on the Twitter at Sports Talk 1240 and on Facebook.com/Sports Talk 1240. Around the world on, locally on AM 1240 and online at SportsTalk1240.com, TuneIn.com, and in your pockets on the TuneIn mobile apps. Did anybody else watch the OJ 30 for 30? Because I did, and it was outstanding. I will say this, though. I was being told for a while that it's the best thing I will ever see at ESPN, that ESPN's ever done. And I'm going to go ahead and tell you, it's like the 15th best 30 for 30. It did not need to be five parts, first of all. It could have been three, and it would have been great. Like, I understood the message they were going for, that there was so much else going on in LA and in America, and there was so much going on behind the scenes with OJ and Nicole that we didn't know about or only heard about, and now we absolutely know about. I'll say this, if you ever had the idea or thought OJ didn't do it, you really can't say that after this. I know that, I forget which channel is doing something, but there's a channel that's doing the opposite and trying to tell you that OJ didn't do it. Look, OJ did it. That's perfectly clear to me now. I always grew up hearing about this and studying. I read Tubin's book. I've read a couple of books about the Marsha Clark's book. I read, Christopher Darden's book. I read a couple different literatures, I guess I'll call it, on the OJ trial. I've seen a couple documentaries. All this to say, it's been interesting and kind of just fascinating to see this year of OJ that we've had. All this to say, OJ did it. And yeah, he got, he didn't necessarily get away with it because his reputation changed forever. But as far as this documentary is concerned, part three and four are amazing. I will just go ahead and tell you, watch it. Take a day if you have to. You can probably space out the first two. You might even be able to just skip the first two. Because it's very preachy and there's a message involved. And I'm not disregarding the message. It is important. But it's very preachy is what I'll say. It's a tough listen for a while. All that to say, It is interesting, this year of OJ that we've had, because you have the FX series, you have this five-part 30 for 30, there's that other one that's coming out that's going to try and tell you that he didn't do it, even though, look, he did it. I think part of it has to do with the fact that he's up for probation next year, up for parole next year, which will put him on probation for another 10 years, and look, model citizen OJ, I know you're never going to hear this, but it'd be amazing if he returns to his old Miami ways after all that's been said about him now. If I'm just giving you like a rating, which is stupid, but if I'm giving you a rating on the OJ 30 for 30, if it's a 5-star system, I'll give it 3. Cause listen, there are 3 parts, about a total of 3 of the 5 parts that I really enjoyed and couldn't look away from. Like, it's one of the most in-depth documentaries you'll ever see. I think the in-depth part is what makes it kind of boring at times, but I don't know. It's worth watching. I'll say that. I have a question though, and you can hit me up on Twitter, with your answers, because I've always asked the older generation when I've interviewed people, that are older than me, who would be that athlete today? Because OJ for me, I was 6 years old in 1994, when the murders happened, when the trial happened, I was about to turn 7, and I always ask people, like OJ my whole life has been a murderer, a guy that got away with murder, a guy that killed his ex-wife and or wife at the time and Ron Goldman. That's who he's always been. And I've always asked people, compare him to an athlete today. And what this documentary did give me is it would be like if Michael Jordan did this. But even so, Michael Jordan was never a movie. Like, if you want to say Space Jam, fine, but Michael Jordan wasn't a movie star. He wasn't as charismatic. I think arrogance. I don't think guy that can read script. I almost think it would be like in 20 years if LeBron did something like this. Because that's the thing, everybody loved OJ. That's what I'm catching from the message from these two shows that have been centered around this trial that happened almost 25 years, a little over 20 years ago. So yeah, I recommend it. It's definitely not as good as advertised. The people telling you it's the greatest thing ESPN's ever done. If I had to rank the top 5 in 30 for 30s, because let's just do that real quick. Hands down, the best one that ESPN has ever done is it's a little known one, but it's Silly Little Game. It's the one that tells you the true heroes of the sports world today. And it's the 9, or I think it was the 9-person, 8-team, first ever fantasy baseball league. I'm just going to tell you that much. It's how fantasy baseball was born. It happened in 1980. I'm just going to tell you this right now. Go watch it. It's on Netflix. It's called Silly Little Game. And you will realize that the addiction that we all have, DraftKings and FanDuel, it all started when these 9 people, these 9 sports writers decided, hey, let's do our own baseball game. Let's own our own baseball teams. So, I'm just going to recommend that. The second one ever, again, there are parts of certain ones where I sit back and I've just been, wow, that was powerful. Like the one without bias, about Len Bias, they get everybody that was in the room when he overdosed, which is tough. I think that's a good one. The one on the Fab Five, which I think was just called Fab Five, it's good, but it's really missing Chris Webber. Like, Chris Webber didn't participate in the documentary, and to me, he's the most important Fab Five member. He's the one who called the timeout, the infamous timeout when Michigan didn't have any, so there's that. Catching Hell, the one about Steve Bartman, I thought was really good. Jordan Rides the Bus is probably my favorite and the second best one, because it talks about Michael Jordan's 2 years away from baseball, and it really gives you an idea of why Michael Jordan stepped away from baseball. I mean, the guy just lost his father, had just won three straight finals, and the way his father was brutally murdered, he needed time to step away. Basketball just didn't matter to him anymore. When you go through trauma like that, sometimes it takes the will to compete out of you. And he went to the minor leagues and saw guys scratching and clawing to keep their dream of being a professional baseball player alive. And it inspired him to do the same, to keep his dream alive. It gave him, you know, an opportunity to rediscover why he fell in love with being a professional athlete in the first place. And then he came back to basketball when he got that back. So I guess you don't need to watch it because I just told you about it. I don't know. All the 30 for 30s are actually pretty well done. There's a couple that are unnecessary. All this to say, there's one coming up about the next 30 for 30 is about Daryl Strawberry and Doc Gooden. Daryl Strawberry actually spoke at my college this year. I think it was in the fall semester. I went to Liberty University, by the way. Daryl Strawberry is actually a pastor out in St. Louis. So I should tell you how Daryl has turned his life around for the good. All that to say, the one that's coming up on Doc and Daryl, look, Met fans, if this summer turns into a depressing summer because the Mets aren't as good as we thought they were, it's only going to get more depressing when you watch that documentary and realize the team that should have won a couple of championships, they didn't because these two screwed up their 20s with a certain foreign substance. Yeah, so that's coming up. That should be good. There's also, of course, as this being a radio show, there is a Mike and the Mad Dog 30 for 30 coming up. I think it's in the spring of 2017. So we've got a while before that comes up, but that should be good. Frances has been talking about it for a while, so that should be good. Sports Talk 1240, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for listening. I know the NBA Finals are going on right now, but if you're actually tuning into this show right now because you hate basketball and you're not going to watch the greatest basketball game that has been played in a long time, that has a lot of narratives attached to it to see whether the 73-win team and the Golden State Warriors can finish the job and win a championship, or if LeBron can lead Cleveland to their first championship since the 1964 championship by the Browns, and you decide to listen to me instead, I appreciate it, because I'm not even listening to it. This is pre-recorded. Let's go around baseball real quick and look at the rest of baseball. We got about 20 minutes before we wrap up. So here's the deal. Before the season, I made some picks, and I talked to Joe Giglio. You can see it on my website, andrewclaudio.com, and we made some preseason picks. Let's give a reaction to this point, or a review to this point, of my picks, and let's see just how good of a predictor I am. You know, I don't claim to know everything. That's a lie. I do. Let's see how much of everything I actually know. Let's start in the American League. That's American League East. We'll start there. The Baltimore Orioles are in first place with a record of 40-28. I said that the Yankees would win that division, and I guess I overestimated their pitching, which is ironic because I thought that their hitting would be the problem, and it hasn't been. Their hitting, like I said before, has actually been better than we thought. The Orioles, look, they're on pace to set a record for home runs in a season. Think about this. The Mets' best hitter is Yoenis Cespedes. He's got 17 home runs, I think 41 RBIs. The Orioles' sixth hitter is Jonathan Scope, and today he hit his 11th home run, and he has 41 RBIs. He would probably be the Mets' second-best hitter, and he think he's got the fourth most of both of those categories. Mark Trumbo has the comeback player of the year wrapped up, although Tim Lincecum came back this weekend, so we'll see. So the Orioles are in first place. I think they're going to win that division. I think you're looking at a 95-win team built on offense. You're looking at the 2001 Indians, you know, or the 90, which is the team that scored 1,000 runs? I think it's the 99 Indians, actually, the team that lost to the Pedro Martinez game in the playoffs. Red Sox are in second place. I said they would compete for a division title. I still just don't like their rotation. I think you're looking at them as a wild card team. It could be cool to see Yankees Red Sox in that one game playoff, but we'll see. The Central, I picked the Indians. Right now, the Indians are in first place. They're only ahead by a half a game over the Royals, but right now, the Indians are in first place. I also picked the Indians to go a little further than a lot of you probably picked them. I picked them to represent the American League in the World Series. It's ironic that this year, where the Cavs might win a championship, I also have Cleveland in the World Series. So I guess this is the year of Cleveland, everybody. The American League West, this is the one thing I did not see coming. I saw the Rangers being good. I saw them being over 500. Right now, they're 45 and 25, have the best record in the National League. Think about this. We've talked about the Cubs at nauseam and how good they are. Right now, the Rangers have one less win than the Chicago Cubs. That's amazing. The Texas Rangers, everybody, after we thought that run they had was over, that run where they went to back-to-back World Series and were a strike away in multiple occasions of winning the World Series, right now the Texas Rangers are the best team in the American League. And they're 8.5 up on the Mariners. We all thought the Astros were going to be the team to beat this year, that the Astros are going to make a run to the World Series, that they had that 1-2-3 punch of Carlos Correa, Jose Altuve, and George Springer batting 1, 2, and 3 in the order. And I guess their pitching has just not been there. Their run differential is -6 so far this year. So the Texas Rangers, though, I actually thought the Mariners might make a run this year. I had Robinson Cano as the American League MVP for a while. Their pitching's still good. They still have Taiwan Walker. He's had a pretty good second year, a rebound second year. And of course, King Felix is still doing his thing, but I don't know. Looks like the Rangers might have that thing locked up this early in the season. As far as the wild card concerns, if the season ended today, the Red Sox would host the Royals. I said that the Red Sox would host the Royals, so yay me. Go to the National League, and it's only going to get depressing, because right now, the Washington Nationals at 43-26, they have the third best record in the National League. They're winning, obviously, the National League East. However, the Mets, who I predicted to win that division, as we've already talked at nauseam. You know, let's just skip the National League East because I'm already getting depressed. I will say this, the Miami Marlins, if Giancarlo Stanton had any hint of the season he's capable of having, the Marlins would be leading that division. I'm not even kidding. Their 1-2-3 punch. I won't even say 1-2-3, but one of the reasons that their 1-4 has been so successful this year is because Ichiro's hitting .350 because he's getting more playing time as a result of Giancarlo Stanton having one of the weirdest slumps in baseball history. Because the thing is, they've only given up 287 runs. That's seventh in the National League. You know, one is the Cubs. They've given up 188. Next is the Mets. Next is the Nationals. And then I think it goes the Dodgers and the Giants, and then it's the Marlins. But Giancarlo Stanton has been so bad, and that's with Ichiro having a good year, Martin Prado having a solid year, Marcell Ozuna having a really good year, Christian Yelich having a good year, and then you have Giancarlo Stanton. I'll never forget this stat when I looked it up. He was 10 for 112 at one point. He got in 104 at-bats, he got out 94 times. That's one-fifth of your season. That's really bad. And 84, in those outs, 48 of those were strikeouts. And this is a guy with almost 200 career home runs. This isn't a rookie. This isn't like Conforto doing that, where you just check it up to a sophomore slump. And this is a guy that is in year two of his $325 million 13-year contract. So he's not going anywhere anytime soon. If he was having a hint of the MVP caliber season he was having, the Marlins, who are 5 games over .500, also without D. Gordon, by the way. Marlins would be in first place. That's not even a hot take. That's just facts. If Giancarlo Stanton was batting .270 with 20 home runs and 50 RBIs right now, you're looking at the Miami Marlins as a first place, probably even a pennant contender with Jose Hernandez at the top of it. Excuse me, Fernandez at the top of that rotation. It's nice to see the Phillies went back to where they're supposed to be, by the way. There's still some resentment as a Mets fan of the Philadelphia Phillies. Just throwing that out there. If you're a Mets fan and you grew up, or I'm 27, if you grew up around the same age that I did and you competed with the Jimmy Rollins and the Ryan Howards and the Chase Utleys, who we'll get into him. I said this on a podcast. Chase Utley, that whole thing's done. The Mets won that series. Chase Utley hit 2 home runs after he got Syndergaard ejected, whatever. It's just done. I'm not talking about Chase Utley in a negative way ever again, except when we refer to him as a Philly. That's how I'll refer to Chase Utley. So yeah, that's the National League East. The Central, you got the Cubs. The Cubs really have run away with that. I obviously picked the Cubs to win that division. I didn't think they were going to be one of the greatest ever, but they've kind of been a 500 team, which you can be when you're 26 games over 500. They've been a 500 team for about 3 weeks now. So I think that when you see them play, you had this series against the Nationals, which showed you something. Look, I still hold to this. If you get past Arrieta and you get past Lester, like the Mets did, their back end of that rotation, who has been really good this year. Hendricks has been really good this year. When you get past them, though, also John Lackey, I'm not forgetting him, they are beatable, is what I'm saying. So, Cubs are going to win 100 games. That's not even a discussion, though. The Pirates are 33-35. I still think they have a run in them. I think the Cardinals aren't as good as they were last year, obviously. I think they're more of an 85-82 win team, but we'll see. Right now, I got that one right. In the West, let's go to the worst pick maybe have ever made in my entire life. I said that the Arizona Diamondbacks would win this division. Yes, you heard that right. Probably guessing why I'm even on the radio right now. I said the Diamondbacks, I loved what they did getting Zach Greinke. I loved that they went out and spent some money. I loved that they traded for Shelby Miller. I thought he had a good year in Atlanta last year and just suffered from having a very little run support. He had, I think, 4 wins last year, and he had 17 quality starts, so that should have led to more than 4 wins. I know this because he was on my fantasy team. So, Diamondbacks, okay, I got it wrong. My bad. I should have known that it's an even year. So, of course, the Giants are going to win that division and probably win the World Series. The Giants have won 8 in a row, though, which is probably the most impressive thing about them. They have this three-headed monster that is actually really scary. As far as best pitching staffs in baseball go, I'll still say that the Mets, if Harvey turns it around, edge out the Giants, but you talk about game one, Madison Bumgarner, game two, Johnny Cueto, game three, Jeff Samardzija. I mean, that's pretty good. That first round matchup of Nationals against the Giants is going to be a very entertaining one. It's weird. I like the Mets pitching matchup against the Cubs. It's crazy to say if the Mets win the wild card game that I'd want to see them play the Cubs in the first round, because first of all, I'd want to get a shot at Chicago, but I want no part of Bumgarner game one, Cueto game two, Samardzija game three. I just don't. You have a team with all that experience, a team that's won 3 World Series, and they have this three-headed monster. We do know one thing. The Diamondbacks will probably not win that division. Just throwing that out there. I don't know if it's just that A.J. Pollock got hurt and they got off to a slow start. And as a result, I mean, Goldschmidt has had a down year as well. So they're in fourth place. They're 32-39. Andrew, what were you thinking? And then, like I said, the one-game wild card, amazingly, as of right now, would be, I think, by percentage points, it would be the Mets against the Marlins, and it would be in Miami. Think about that. There would be a playoff game in Miami. where they'd get about 22,000 people, which is half of the capacity of that building. It really is amazing that the Marlins were able to get that new ball. Sports Talk 1240 here on 1240 AM here in West Babylon, Long Island. I love that intro. I love that imaging. It's a shame, and I guess I should hint at this. This will be my last time for a while on Sports Talk 1240. I appreciate the opportunity to come and talk to you guys, and I thank you for listening to me and this amateur radio host that I've been, and to all the guests that have come on over the time I've been here. I appreciate the chance to talk sports, you know. I'll end with this. I was thinking today, you know, I joked around in the beginning about my dad and how he made me a New York Mets fan. And I was thinking today about the things he has taught me. At the end of the day, we're kids in a candy shop when we're talking sports, when we pretend that stuff matters and we try to make careers talking about this and we try to overanalyze, you know, if LeBron sending out a tweet or unfollowing somebody on Twitter or if he goes to Miami on vacation and the overanalyzation of just these little things. And it just doesn't matter at times. You're reminded of this when real stuff happens, tragedies like what happened in Orlando. Honestly, both things that happened in Orlando, the Pulse nightclub shooting and also the alligator attack at the actual park. Crazy thing about that, my cousin and her husband, they actually just moved that weekend. The day that they left for Orlando was the night of the nightclub shooting. And the day that they got there was the day of the alligator attack. They just moved, like, left Long Island and moved to Orlando. So, yeah, obviously, you know, today being Father's Day, I got sentimental thinking about my dad and what he's taught me. And one of the biggest things, first of all, yeah, he took me to my first Mets game. He's taken me to probably the most Mets games in my life. But then I went down the list of things he's taught me. Let's see. Everything I know about Microsoft Word came from my dad. Or Microsoft Office, I should say, came from my dad. Everything I learned about baseball, like how to play it, came from my dad. My dad is a umpire on Long Island. So if you've ever been ejected from a game for cursing, it's probably my dad. He taught me how to be a gentleman. He taught me how to respect women, obviously. He taught me how to grill. Taught me how to shave. And last but not least, he taught me how to keep sports in perspective. You know, at the end of the day, guys, none of this matters. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm a diehard, and I just spent the last hour speaking the Mets into every conversation that I could. I am a diehard Mets fan, you know, my gift for Father's Day to my dad this year. I think this happened after last time I was on here, but I had the chance to go interview Ron Darling in New York City, and I took a copy of his book there. And to the interview, and he signed it and gave it to my dad for Father's Day, and well, not for Father's Day, but signed it to my dad and said, you know, let's go Mets, 1986 champs. And, you know, I was able to give that to my dad, a personally signed Ron Darling book for Father's Day. Yeah, that was cool. But I hope, you know, and I respect this, like when people tell me, like, how did I become Mets? It's usually, you know, my dad, you know, watching baseball games with my dad. Well, how are you a Jets fan? Well, watching football games with my dad. A lot of you are listening to a sports talk show right now because your father showed you their love for sports. 90% of the Yankee fans that I know are Yankee fans because their dad is a Yankee fan. They grew up watching Mickey Mantle and Roger Maris in 61 and Yogi Berra and the Yankees of the 80s and Don Mattingly and Thurman Munson and Reggie Jackson and that 77-78 run. I even include 76 in that. Sorry, Yankee fans, don't kill me. All that to say, I am glad that I got to do this on Sports Talk 1240. Thank you for the time that you've given me on this show. And happy Father's Day from me to you, all the dads out there. Let's wrap it up. Thank you to all the guests that I've ever had on this show. Thank you to Rob Kowal for giving me a chance on this show. I appreciate it. have fun this week. Regardless, if Cleveland, either congratulations or you'll get through this. You is smart. You is kind. You is important. You can get through this, especially since I predicted the Indians to go to the World Series. It'll happen. You know, like angels in the outfield, it can happen. Thank you to Brian on the other side of the glass for pushing the buttons and doing the honors. Have a good week, everybody. Sports Talk 1240. Follow me on Twitter at Andrew Claudio. That's Andrew, like in the Bible, and Claudio, C-L, audio. Peace. Have a good week, everybody. Take care.